Welcome, everybody, to a new episode of Lo-Fi Lit. Today, we're talking to Juliet Scoria. She is the author of You Are the Snake. She is the author of Witch Hunt. And, of course, Juliet the Maniac. She is the founder of Zona Motel, along with Misha Marin, who I previously had on. This was an excellent interview. Thank you, Julia, for coming on. I appreciate it. Excellent talk and conversation. Appreciate everyone and the support. I appreciate the shout out. Go listen to Misha Marion and Julia Scoria on textual healing with Mallory Smart. They did an excellent interview over there. This is a totally different sort of interview because me and Mallory have two different interview styles. Also, I stole some of her people and we did a little reading. I'm trying to get that out. I'm working on the reading. It was excellent with Claire Hopple, with Kirsty McKenzie, and a lot of other people. Many, many other people. Jillian Luft. I'm not going to list everyone. Those are three of the people. And that's coming out at some time. I was trying to get that out tonight. It's not happening because it kept freezing on me and glitching. And I was yelling at my computer. But also, you're getting Mike Talk tonight. So that's going up along with this episode. So you get two episodes. All right, guys. See you later. Shout out to El Nash, who I almost got. I rescinded the offer at the last minute. I feel like I kind of feel like a carny, just like pitching this podcast out all the time. Even though she's done, El Nash does a lot of podcasts. I think I gotta wait. I'm gonna wait till her next book comes out, and then she can come on and we can talk about Juggalos and spiders and whatever, you know, things with spiders. Yeah, I really enjoyed also putting the graphic together for this episode. I think I did a stellar job. You gotta look at the graphic. It didn't take me as much time as I thought it would have. I just thought of it and I was like, oh, of course that should be the graphic. Juliet Scoria, excellent person, fantastic person. I admire so much. This was amazing. One of my favorite poems is about Scott's poop in the bathtub and how she like elicits love, just like full love, and she's doing it with like a speck of poop, and like that's not, it's funny to even talk about, and it's a funny poem, but like you get the feeling out of it of what you're supposed to. It's a love poem and it's awesome, and like I don't even know how you like even talk about it. It's a great poem. Yeah, okay, I'm going now. We're done. Bye.
I don't know what I would say about diarrhea other than I don't like it.
Well, I listened to a podcast you did with, like, you were with Scott, and you guys went on this long thing about diarrhea.
Yeah.
It was, like, during 2020, so that makes sense.
Yeah. Maybe then. Maybe not now. 2025.
Yeah. That bookcase, is that, like, you and Scott's, like, collected books?
We have a few other shelves in the house, but that's the bulk of them. We've got some in my office. You got some in the living room. I have to make some more shelves or at least install them on the wall, but that's the majority. Yeah.
Did you have to build the bookcase?
Yeah, they were like pretty nice but inexpensive ones that it took us like a really long time to build them. But yeah.
Do you have to? Do you ever like sell them, or do you want to keep every book you've ever had?
We've gotten rid of a lot of them. Like the large majority is probably Scott's because he has a problem with books. And he's gotten rid of tons and tons. This is like the cream of the crop.
Do you have to get on to him about this?
No, like that's the only thing he like spends his money on, so that's fine. Like if he wants to spend money on books, that's good.
I was listening to one of your podcasts with Brad Listy, like from like 2014, and you guys were talking about anger, and I was wondering like, has that like has, because that comes up in your book, the You Are a Snake, and mm-hmm. it seems to be like brought up through, has that calmed down, or do you
still? I think so. I think like anger is like a habit that you can get into, and like if you break yourself out of it, then you're gonna be less likely to get there. But like I still think I'm probably like angrier than like the average, what we consider normal, but I feel like pretty mellow these days, besides I don't know, low-grade depression here and there.
Yeah, Adderall, I take Adderall, and sometimes it can get triggered, and there's like Adderall rage.
Uh-huh.
But like I was reading the Pluck It Out story, and that seems to be one, like it comes up in the beginning and then it comes up at the end for the girl. I just like, this has nothing to do with that, but the way that you craft your stories, it's like everything has weight to it. There's like everything has a point and it comes back. And I feel like you're kind of a master craftsman at like short stories. It's like so well fucking crafted and thought out, and you don't always see that.
Uh-huh.
Did that like, was that always a point for you? Like everything needs to have weight to it.
I mean, I think like, yeah. Like in terms of writing the stories, I'll just write them. And then in the revision process, it's like, well, why is this here? Should this be somewhere else? Should this like be a little bit more pronounced or something like that? So I think it's, you know, like in the editing, but not like the drafting process that I think about that type of thing.
And like in the Pluck It Out story, like the first part, it's so poetic and strong. And I feel like maybe some of the later parts, they're a bit more simple or straightforward. Do you make it a point when you're writing to have the writing, I don't know, maybe, does that make sense to you? Is it stronger like in the first part and then later on you can, I don't know, relax that? Or
I think about movement in stories and like, you know, even longer things and shorter things too. It's like how does the movement progress throughout, and you know, you don't want the same note all the way through. So just kind of like thinking about how one piece propels you to the next, and you need some lulls in between, or the latter parts aren't going to sound as loud.
What I liked with the Dan, like there's this character named Dan Patterson who's playing with himself in that story, and that was like a funny little bit, but then like you bring it back up when they're at church and like this guy's ranting and raving, and then like this kid stands up to go get like saved. And this girl, she's like part of this town. She's kind of an outsider, and she thinks it's all kind of silly, and she's kind of judgmental. And like that started to irritate me. But then at the end, you kind of subvert it, where it's like, maybe these kids did get saved through the main character's perspective. And like, it was totally awesome how you twist that around. Like you play with people's and the reader's expectations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, like, that was, like, you know, a fair amount of that story is based in reality. Like, I did go to a Christian school briefly in junior high, and, like, I wanted to be saved, but, like, I just couldn't. And I thought that was interesting of, like, thinking, like, that's impossible for me to, you know, kind of believe in religion in that way, but I want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, seemed like a good place to start from.
But it's like in this, I feel like some people, if they were like writing, or maybe they started out writing, they feel like they have to put in their political opinions, and they would like only put the judgmental part in and like not have the little twist at the end where the girl sees them kind of shining, and mm-hmm. she goes from being judgmental, but then she starts to accept it in a way.
Yeah. Well, I think that's like what I'm interested in general, is like conflicting states of being where you have more than one feeling at once and they contradict each other. And I don't know, I think that's kind of like one thing I'm largely interested in, kind of like all of the work that I've done.
How do
Maybe
you know
not
when
all
to,
of it, but most of it at least.
How do you know when to end on like a part one or part two?
It's like very just like you just know when it's there, and I don't know, you can just kind of tell. And it's not like I wouldn't be able to tell someone how to end something, but you know, you need a certain amount of resolution and a certain amount of ambiguity, I feel like. Like I'm not in for, I don't really like stories where everything's neatly summed up, but I think kind of like a combination between those two of ambiguity and resolution.
Like the Arsonist, that little short one, like that ends on a very ambiguous thing, but it like the shorter ones, like you have to even make more powerful even.
Yeah, I really love a good short story because I think they're challenging in an interesting way, but also fun. And I feel like relatively easy for me. Like some of the stories in that collection, I was like, okay, I tried something new there. Now I'm going to write a story that's like easy. And The Arsonist was one of the ones that I was like wanting to be easy. Natural Selection was another one of just like, let's write something that I know how to do very well. Because I think that I like to write stuff that I don't know if I'm going to be able to pull it off. But it was, I don't know, kind of nice to be like, okay, now let's do one of those little micro stories that I learned how to do in Black Cloud and can handle just fine.
Do you feel like it's easier for you to write? You just said.
No, I just feel like I have more sort of like tools in my arsenal now. Like I felt like when I wrote Black Cloud, I knew I was very limited in terms of like what I was capable of pulling off at the time. And then I felt like I taught myself a lot in Juliet the Maniac. And, you know, I think it's fun to do something that you don't know if you're going to be able to pull it off or not. And sometimes I'm able to, and sometimes I'm not. And then I put it aside. So yeah, I feel like I can handle more components to a story than I used to be able to, or to a piece of writing than I used to be able to.
When you're writing like Natural Selection or The Arsonist, do you know like from the get-go this one's going to be a short one? Or maybe like when you're reading, like you're writing like Pluck It Out, do you know that that's going to have parts to it?
Yeah, generally speaking, of like I knew Natural Selection I wanted to be short. Pluck It Out, I was thinking maybe not novella length, but like a longer story that had a bunch of different scenes that was, I don't know, about being in junior high, which is such a strange period in somebody's life.
Were there any scenes that you wrote for Pluck It Out that ended up being its own short?
I don't think so, but some of the stuff in Pluck It Out was like outtakes from Juliet the Maniac in some sort of way. Like originally I had thought that Juliet the Maniac was going to be a longer time frame. And more just kind of like normal teenage behavior before it went into like mental illness. And then I realized that that was like asking way too much of a reader. So there were certain, I might have written some parts of that story like a long time ago, or maybe I started from scratch but had the same sort of idea. I don't really remember. But it was kind of like, I think of it as kind of like an extension of Juliet the Maniac.
Do you feel like when you published Juliet the Maniac, that was like kind of a celebration for like the alt-lit community? Like
I
for like,
don't know. I feel like
no?
it was for me in that like I had been wanting to write that book for a really long time and hadn't been successful at it and finally got it to work, and it felt very much like I was like winning a battle with myself of like this thing that wouldn't work and wouldn't work and wouldn't work, and finally I got it to work.
How long did it not work for?
Well, I started sort of writing it in grad school, so I graduated in 2011. And then again in 2012, and then again in like 2014, and then it finally started to click in like 2015, I think.
What do you think needed to happen?
I think I just needed to get better as a writer. Like I think also I had to let go of like preconceived notions I had about what it was going to look like deciding that it was going to be fragmentary was really helpful for me, and like I think needed to happen.
I felt like it was such, like, you're such an icon of the alt-lit, like, spaces. I felt that was very kind of that style. Like, it, like, definitely, like, if someone hadn't been reading for a long time, they could pick it up and it was easy kind of to read it. Even like, because the pieces get longer and longer in a way, and it feels like you're kind of teaching maybe someone back to reading a book if they hadn't read it in a while.
Yeah, I wanted it to be the type of book that you could read even if you don't like reading that much.
Yeah. do you feel like you, like in your future books, you're going to return to that, or like you do that once and then you go on and do something else?
What do you mean, like the fragmentary stuff?
Yeah.
I think I like fragmentary stuff in general, so I don't think I would like ever abandon that. Like I like reading stuff that feels like that, and then like writing stuff that feels like that. So I think I'll keep it up.
Because when I was reading it, I felt like, oh, this is such a big deal for like the community in general, and like someone published a book and it's like in Barnes and Nobles and like everyone's kind of celebrating.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah. Do you feel like that with any other, like, your friends' books?
Like, they accomplished something and it's a win for all of us?
Yeah, like Elle Nash when she wins, like, a huge award in Glasgow.
Yeah, like, I think, I don't know, if you write a book that is good and uncompromising and people celebrate it, that's great, regardless of, like, it's a success for all of us. So for sure, yeah.
Like that one that like Jian published that was like Life is, I forgot what it was called. Life is something and like won this huge award.
Uh-huh. Like,
that was pretty fucking cool. Remember it was like Atticus, someone published it?
Yeah. Life is with People is his weird cartoon book. And then Preparations for
Life. Yeah.
Yeah. That one. Yeah. Like that one's a win for everybody, I feel like.
Did Misha ever meet Jian?
Yes.
She did?
It'll be in, you can read a fictionalized scene of that in Scott's new book, Fights, which is he came over, I think this was the last time I saw Jian, and Matt and Misha came over for dinner, Jian came over for dinner, and Jian thought that Misha was going to be like this ex-con because of her book. And he seemed like very disappointed in how square we all were of just like Misha and Matt aren't sober. Actually, Matt's sober, but Misha's not. But none of us wanted to smoke weed or drink. And I think he thought he was going to hang out with like cool people. And instead he just hung out with people who wanted to be sober.
Did that like he didn't like that?
I think he just thought it was going to be something other than what it was. Yeah.
And that was a scene to put in a book?
Yeah, Scott put that in his book.
Okay. Does he have, like, things that he experiences that he probably doesn't give a shit. He'll, like, put anything in a book.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, you know, like, he cut some from that book out because he didn't want to hurt Jian's family unnecessarily. So he kind of, like, put himself through, like, a sensitivity read of just, but, yeah. I think both of he and I are not going to hold back in terms of what we put in a book.
When did you first meet Jian?
I first met him, I think, when Hill William came out in 2013. So Scott and I were dating. Actually, I'd met Jian before, but just real briefly when I was, I think, writing for Electric Literature. I don't know if I talked to him or what. But I remember reading some sort of old piece of writing I'd done, and I was like, oh, I did meet Jian. But the first time I remember meeting him was in 2013 when Scott and I were dating but not yet married, and Hill William came out, and we stayed at his apartment, and we went over to the Fat Possum apartment and were offered cocaine and just drank soda instead. And I don't know, Jian was very welcoming to me. And I liked him immediately.
I feel like if you offered me cocaine, I would do it from the pressure.
Yeah, it was kind of strange because I don't think anyone's like offered me, like people had done drugs like around me since I've been sober, but I don't think anyone had like offered me like hard drugs since I got sober. So it was strange and that I didn't want to do it. Like it just seemed absurd to me to do cocaine in the middle of the day.
Yeah. Do you take that? Do you like judge people or do you like, oh, that's what them?
I don't think so. I mean, like, I think people have a problem with substances, and if you want to call that judgmental, I don't mean like anyone, but like sometimes I'll look at someone and be like, that person has a problem with alcohol or something like that. But that's not with a sense of judgment. That's just like, I think I recognize that in that person.
Mm-hmm. How did you get clean?
There's a lot of ways to answer that question. Do you mean like the methods or like the reasoning or what?
The reasonings, maybe.
The reasonings was like a lot of different weird coincidences or things that converged at once. Like one of them was very simple. I was taking a medication that I had to get a liver panel done on a regular basis, and all of a sudden the liver panel was like fucked. And then another was I was going to grad school and I'd like really wanted to get into Brooklyn College and I didn't care. Like I was like had no feelings about it and I just realized that I was like incredibly numb all the time, like not even depressed, but just felt numb. And a couple of my sober friends moved back to San Diego. And so it was really kind of like the liver thing that instigated it, where I was just like, I wonder if this could be due to drinking and doing drugs, which looking back, that's absurd. Like, of course it was drinking and doing drugs. So then I, decided to try sobriety out. And my friend who was in recovery, he was like, why don't you just try it for 30 days? And if you don't like it, then you can go back to drinking and using. So I was like, that's good logic. So then I started going to a 12-step program and felt horrible the first, I don't know, week or two, like really horrible. And I thought that I wouldn't feel so horrible if I didn't have a problem.
Do you ever feel like this stuff is gets too personal on like an interview where you don't really know the
No,
person?
I don't think so.
Oh, for real? Oh, cool. Okay. So what was the methods, I guess?
12-step program, yeah. And you
Okay.
know, I've been in therapy off and on since I was 15. I didn't go to therapy for, I think maybe like when I had like 2 years clean, I started going to therapy again. But good old 12-step programs, like that was really the essential.
And you were talking about a therapist on Brad Listies, where like you had some woo-woo therapist that really helped you.
I
You're still
don't
with
know.
them?
I don't know what I was talking about. When I was at the boarding school, we had some really woo-woo therapists.
Well, there's a therapist that like I guess Scott used in like the opening of like Hill William.
Oh yeah, she's great. I wouldn't even think she's that woo-woo. She's just kind of like a hippie. And I just went to her for a few months. And I thought she was cool too, because there was a point where it was just like, I think we're done. And I liked that a therapist would do that, would just tell you that you've moved through the stuff you needed to move through. Because specifically, I was going to her for like a targeted reason, which is kind of unusual, which is like, I realize I have more shit going on with my high school history. And if I'm publishing a book, I need to like be in a better place than I am currently with that before I talk about it in front of an audience.
Does it like when you talk about, I guess, in an interview, it doesn't bother you? I guess you were saying. I don't know why I'm going back to that since we're
No,
here.
I think it's like the whole therapy 12-step thing of just like whatever, like I'll tell a room full of strangers about this, like it's not that big of a difference. I think like having a pen name helps too, because Julia Discoria doesn't exist, so it's not like I worry about like my students reading about it. I mean, they could if they really wanted to be clever on Google, but I don't think they do. So yeah.
How'd you meet Austin? In Brooklyn?
Austinism.
Yeah.
I think just through the internet world of like that I knew he existed. And I think maybe in like 2014, Scott and I did a reading in Chicago and I think he was there, but I just think he's a very sweet, good person.
Are you going to his wedding?
No, I didn't even know he's getting married. I'm not like good friends with him or anything. Yeah.
Oh, he's getting ready to catch.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. That's cool.
Did you meet, I guess, Lisi in Brooklyn?
I've never met her in person.
Okay.
I guess the closest is she told me that she came to Mellow Pages and she couldn't go inside because I was doing a podcast inside Mellow Pages. But I'll meet her in March for when we go to AWP. We're all going to AWP. So,
She's coming.
yes. Yeah.
Oh shit, cool. I was gonna ask you about, that threw me off. Okay, I was gonna ask you about the Thanksgiving, I know this is really random. These are like random questions, but like things I just want to know. November 25th, 2017, when Giancarlo, he tweets about not wanting an agent and the whole Twitter fucking blew up. And like, I just saw you like tweeting furiously at like dumbass people. Do you remember that day?
Yes. Yeah. That was like not one of, like, there's been like multiple Thanksgiving massacres on Twitter, and that I think is the most notorious of them. I think people get like bored and drunk and irritated by their family and act out on social media. But that one was really strange because I replied with what I thought was an innocuous tweet, which is, it's funny that all the people who are mad about this have their agent in their Twitter bio. And then people like flipped out at that, and like some guy like told Monica, my agent, on me, like he told on me. Monica was just like, okay, like, what do you want me to do? And it was just a very absurd internet moment. And it makes me laugh thinking about it years later. And also how Gian reacted to it, because he was responding in very comedic ways. But then he kind of like went off the deep end and was like insulting himself without realizing it or thinking about it.
Like how?
Well, he called Darcy's book a pamphlet, which, you know, one, it's not. And two, it's like, well, then why did you publish it? But he had just had hurt feelings at the time from Darcy. So.
Yeah, I remember them getting into like that kind of fractured some of the community in some way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think they got over it at some point, maybe. Hopefully.
I think so. I don't know. I know that she seemed fond of him when he died. So I think, I don't know. It's their business, not mine.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever read Fuckboy?
Yes, I did.
Did you like it?
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah. Yeah. What did you think about the bullshit that happened?
I thought it made them both look bad. Like, yeah. I thought Sam looked bad, and then I thought later Sean looked bad. And you know, Sam is, I think, is like a really amazing writer, and I get where he was coming from, but I think, you know, he went about it all wrong. Like, if a person is using your book as inspiration, that's not bad. Like, that's good.
Yeah.
And you know, but I mean, like, I think that the weird thing about writing is that it's such a insecurity driven thing. Like, you're taking this very personal thing and turning it into an object, and people are telling you whether the object is good or not. So like, I feel like anytime somebody misbehaves, it's understandable, at least to a certain extent. Like, one of my normal friends, when my book was coming out last year, like, putting a book out is not a fun experience, or at least not for me. It's like a really miserable one in a lot of ways. And she's like, why are you like so upset about this? Like, isn't this good? And I was like, well, just imagine that your job performance is like in a major media publication and they're talking about you doing your job. Like, wouldn't that be uncomfortable? And she's like, oh yes, I guess it would. So I think just kind of, I'm sure it's not exclusive to writing, but just like, if you're making art and people are telling you if it's good or bad, then, and rejection is part of the process, et cetera, then it's going to breed insecurity, and insecurity causes us to act out.
That is very, very true. I know a lot of circumstances like that people have acted out in this community that I don't want to go into. But yeah, that went off my head somewhere. Okay, so in the book that you're writing, I want to go into that. Like, can you go more into that about how, like, when you put out a book, you don't like the process of it? Like, what would you change if you could?
I would like to send in a body double for myself. Mm-hmm. Like, I just go check out, and then my body double takes care of it, and I don't have to think about it. Because, I mean, I think it's like a, like, at least for me, like, a desire to control things, but an inability to control things. Like, attention makes me uncomfortable to a certain degree, but I like it to a certain degree. Like, it's just a very, you feel very exposed. Yeah, and then it's gotten even worse, because I feel like, now the world is so not friendly to indie presses.
Oh, really?
Where it was more friendly when I first started publishing. And Yeah, I think like promoting oneself is a disgusting feeling. I do like doing readings a lot, like when a book is coming out, like those are the things that I enjoy, is like doing a reading. It makes it feel more tangible than having people talk about you on the internet, which I find to be uncomfortable. But like going to a reading and having people like appreciate you feels good.
Has anyone ever talked to you about you on the internet that you did not like? I feel like you're pretty celebrated.
I mean, like people gotten mad at me for sure, and said some dumb shit about my writing, but that's fine. Like you can't control what somebody's gonna get out of your writing.
Well, they're fucking dumb.
But even because you know, like when my first two books came out, they were like on micro presses, and so the people who read them were mostly like people that I knew, at least knew of. And then when Juliet the Maniac came out, like strangers were saying things, and it really weirded me out at first. It's just like, what are they doing? Why are they reading my book? When that's like the goal is for strangers to read your book.
I remember when you came out with a cassette. It was you and Scott. I remember buying that and listening to it and loving that.
Yeah, I really liked that too. That was cool little
Can
thing.
you talk about that?
I mean, I don't really remember much about it other than recording it on my phone in my bedroom and having to do it a bunch of times. And yeah, I don't really have like a specific memories about that
Why
other
are
than
people going
what
after micro presses?
do you mean people are going after micro presses?
You said that like people look down on indie presses.
Oh, I mean, I think that they're just being ignored. Like, I think that the book world online has shrunk so much that like you're not gonna be covered at all if you're on an indie press, except for, a few choice places that do that specifically.
That's weird
And
that people would go after you about like, oh, only your friends are going to read that. Because I feel like that's a criticism that people have always had about indie presses, and to make it personally about someone is dumb.
I don't think anyone did that about me. They got mad at me about other things.
Oh, about
Yeah.
what?
I used to misbehave online, and then Scott was brought into it at one point, so now I don't misbehave online, or at least I do my best not to. People have gotten mad about stuff that I've written before. And I think, just existing
'Cause it was really
people.
good and they're jealous.
Yeah, probably so. I'm sure
Yeah.
that's it.
Exactly it. Can you talk about you said I think in textual healing you had a ghost story?
So it's kind of, maybe it's not that long, but so Scott and I, we were at Gian's apartment. Like Scott felt like Zona had like followed him there when he was doing, I think, the Hill William release party. Like it was just a very strange sort of feeling. So, who cares? That's not evidence of anything. And then a few months later, Matthew Savoca and Kendra Grant Malone, who are two writers who don't publish much anymore, they came to visit Scott. I came to visit Scott, and we went to Matthew's great grandfather's grave, which was in the middle of nowhere in West Virginia. Like we wouldn't have found it if we hadn't gotten pulled over and the cop like told us where it was. And then we came home that night, and like I started crying, like kind of hysterically. They were downstairs, so they were not a witness to this, thankfully. And I like couldn't stop crying. I had no reason to be crying. And then I started seeing all this really weird shit, like a man who was like dissolving, and like this weird like prism thing. And I'm bipolar. Who knows? Maybe it was bipolar stuff. And then all of a sudden went away. And then we went to Zona's grave, and we brought her some things. I can't remember exactly what it was, but like maybe like tobacco and alcohol or coffee or something. And as soon as we did that, I think it was raining, and then it stopped raining like very, very suddenly. And then it just felt different after that. Like it seemed like Zona was no longer mad anymore. So I feel like very skeptical when it comes to paranormal stuff, and sometimes I just like to believe in it because it's more fun to believe in it. So it could very well just be like my imagination. could be real. I don't really care. Like, it felt real to me, in at least.
What was the prism like?
It was just like this weird triangle thing that was like sitting there in the air, and like
awesome.
It was very strange. You know, I've had hallucinations from my bipolar disorder. It didn't feel like that. It felt like the air was like thick and like creating shapes.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, I've seen shadow people before.
Uh-huh.
Like standing in like other people's yards.
Uh-huh. I've never seen shadow people before. I've seen a couple what I think were ghosts, maybe. There was that instance. And then when I was working at this restaurant, I saw a guy that was similar in that it was kind of like dissolving and like holes in it. And the people at the restaurant, they told me that the restaurant was haunted because in its place before it was a restaurant, a man had killed his family and himself. And I looked it up, and that did indeed happen at that restaurant. Those are my main ghost stories.
Did you feel anything in the air?
I thought that there was somebody there at that point. Like, I thought that there was somebody there, and there was nobody there except for this apparition type deal. And then with the weird part that was Zona and the old graveyard, like, it felt very, very oppressively sad, and it felt like it wasn't my sadness. It felt like it was just like present outside of me.
That's cool. Do you think you have like you exist between two dimensions or something?
I think that's what mental illness is. Like, I think like mental illness is like a direct telephone line to the part of the existence that we don't understand, whether you want to call that God or the afterlife or whatever. I think that's like a gift that you get from being mentally ill, is you have the telephone line there.
Oh, that's so fucking cool. I've never even thought of it in that way.
I don't think the telephone line always works. I think it just sometimes does.
How did you come to this? Like,
I think just like, you know, like if you have an experience with mental illness, it's awful, but there's usually some sort of like benefit to it. And like feeling like really connected to things I don't understand while I was in very bad places. So it just kind of seemed like, oh, this is a gift. It's also a curse, but it's a gift too, that I get to experience things that other people don't.
Do you think you would explore that in a novel or something? I would love to read something like that.
I think it's just hard because there's so many, like, I don't know, corny new age stuff that it's like seems very difficult to talk about without falling into those traps. So I've like tried to do it in subtle ways at various points in books. But yeah, I think like writing about it exclusively. I do want to write a book at some point that's like about this manic episode I had in 2013, where I was like doing all of the things you're supposed to do, but lost my mind anyway. And that was a very spiritually charged section of my life.
What were you doing?
Well, I mean, I was like sober. I was taking care of myself, meaning sleeping and eating and stuff like that. I was taking my medicine. I got put on a different medicine, and the different medicine sent me like very, very quickly into like batshit crazy mania.
Have you had any friends that like have these experiences too? Well, I guess that Scott has.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I'm sure if I sat here and thought about it for a while, I would say yes.
So Zona is someone that you've experienced before. Like, that's a real thing.
It's felt real to me. I mean, I don't know if it's real, but it felt real to me. Like, I felt like there was this woman who was mad at Scott and Chris for trying to make something out of her life and her death. And then she somehow got like attached to me. And then she was no longer mad and was like, okay, that's cool. You can do that now.
So it wasn't like when you're naming Zona Motel, it doesn't come obvious at first to name it that, but it feels like it's like that's a pointed thing.
Yeah. Well, and also, I mean, like, it's just like a big part of Green Bear County, which is where Leash is from, where Scott's from, where I live now, where I've taught for a while, where Scott's parents live. I mean, it's not famous for very much, and one of the few things is the Green Bear Ghost. So I think, like I liked the idea of Zona Motel being rooted in West Virginia, if it was rooted anywhere. And I don't know if I didn't ask Misha that, but I think she did too. And so naming it like after something West Virginian seemed good.
Well, it seems like it's interesting of that story, the background of the Zona Ghost. And then with Misha's background coming from this like Alderson, like hospitality house that takes care of convicts and women, and those two stories kind of converge, it does create a really interesting idea, like, I guess, perspective if you think about it from that way. There's a bit of lore to it.
Yeah, and I think I liked that too, of it means something, but not really. And like, it's kind of emblematic of this place where I live, where she's from. But I don't expect other people to know that. I guess they do now, if they listen to things where we talk about it.
Is there a plaque with like your name and Scott's name and Misha's name like in the town that you live?
No, and it's funny because they have like a literary festival here and none of us want to do the literary festival. They never asked us, but I like kind of dread that maybe they will someday and then I'd have to like figure out a way to say no.
Why do they not ask you? You guys are like the main fucking people.
I mean, because, like, this town is, like, it's a cute little town that's, like, artsy, but it's, like, you know, like, boomer artsy. Like,
yeah.
They're not going to be interested in indie lit. I don't think they even know we exist, and I'd prefer to keep it that way.
For real? Yeah, there's, like, festivals in Tulsa that, like, I don't participate in because they have, there's really no idea of, like, alt-lit or online spaces at all. And it's always a bit older than me, like, if you, like, 20 years older than me, usually.
Yeah, like there's a lot of bougie older people who are like, I'm artsy, but they don't, you know, read indie literature, which is fine.
Yeah, that's true. And then they like go to these like how to publish and they do these weird little events. And it's like, just like write your thing and put it out. But I guess they don't think that way.
Yeah.
There's this idea of like it's supposed to go through these certain channels. You're supposed to have an agent and all this stuff. Well, I know Monica Woods, like, your agent, like, she also works with, I think she works with Mira?
Yeah, she works with, like, everybody, yeah.
Yeah. How did you meet her?
Kind of funny. So, I didn't have an agent in this, like, strange micro era where you could be an alt-lit or an indie-lit author and some agent would reach out and contact you as opposed to the reverse. So Emily Gould had Emily Books and she was putting out Black Cloud through Emily Books. And she just asked me like, hey, do you have an agent? And I said, no. So then she put me in touch with a woman named Lauren, who was my agent. She was Chelsea Hodson's agent too. And then Lauren left the business and she was at, I think it was Inkwell. And so then they handed me to Monica, which was fine because I knew who Monica was. So I've never queried an agent before in my life. It was this weird sort of like era that I feel lucky to have been a part of where like you don't have to have a book finished. You don't have to query. Just somebody asks you, hey, do you want to be my client? And then you say, okay.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Would you ever be someone's agent?
No, that seems like the opposite part of the business that I want to be in. Like, mm-hmm. Monica's really good at what she does. Like she had sent me an email chain that she sent to Melville House of her like parsing through all the different bits of my contract. And I was like, wow, she's really good. She's really tenacious and like, I don't know, good with detail. And that's not what I want to do.
Well, if you guys held like an event in Greenville or Greenbrier, would you guys hold like an event there?
I've thought about it. I mean, I don't know when I would want to, but like they have like a little historic theater and I figured they'd probably let us if we wanted to, but I don't feel motivated to do that. That's like kind of like in the future type of thing that I'd be wanting to do that.
Is Zona ever going to have like a bi-weekly podcast?
I mean, if somebody wants to, I don't want to do a podcast, but if anyone wants to, then they can.
What do you think it would look like?
I have no idea. Like, it would be up to them. Like, I think that's one thing of having a bunch of different editors and writers is, like, do your own thing. If you want to do this, then you can and you should. Grant Miller, he's started doing a bit of a podcast of the Last Meal on Earth thing. He's done a couple episodes of those. And we're supposed to put them on podcast platforms, but I don't know what's going on with that.
Cool. Cool. What do you think a bi-weekly podcast at Zona would look like? If it wasn't, could you have two, like the Last Meal one and then the other one, hypothetically?
People can do whatever they want. Okay. If they're into a podcast, and then they should.
Okay. What would you want to hear?
I don't know. Like, I kind of want... I think I would want, like, specific topics. Like, you get different writers to talk on specific topics. I liked what Lucy was doing with when she was putting out Kristen's book and Oscar's book, where they would have, like, kind of, like, little panels podcast. Mm-hmm. I think I like that format.
Yeah, and getting different people together and, like, talking about one topic.
Yeah, I think I want to do that for at least like one of the Meet Me in the Motel Lobbies things, is get some sort of like Zoom that we record on a particular topic.
Those are genius. That was like one of my favorite things that you guys do.
Good. That was Mallory Smart was a big part of that. And then, you know, we sent emails to a bunch of different people, and they're like kind of telling us their ideas of ways to generate money. And Mallory's email helped a lot, because she was like, I think I would like want to pay to feel like part of a community. And then there's the fact that nobody actually wants to do anything to be like, they want to feel connected, but they don't want to do anything to feel connected. So I was like, okay, well, here is a very passive way that people can feel like they're face to face with somebody, or kind of like more human to human, without having to go anywhere or do anything.
Yeah. Like, that's so true. Like, yeah. Because sometimes, like, you go into a Zoom or you do a reading, I try to interact with other people, and it's very hard. I feel like I'm being too bossy or something. When, like, I'm
I think, like, people are just like, oh, I want community, but then, like, they don't want to go to the reading, or they don't want to go to the Zoom reading, or,
yeah.
You know, like, it's like a very wanting one thing but doing another type of instinct that I think, you know, the internet and just the way that the world is shaped has like programmed into us. COVID didn't help.
Totally. Yeah. The Meet Me in the Motel Lobby. Like, I loved, Yvonne's, where he did like the video game thing. And I feel like that's such like a section of like another like sub niche community that's huge right now, like younger audiences. And like, I just think that's so genius that a lit mag or lit blog would even allow someone to even explore that idea.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's so many things that are not related to writing, but are related to writing, like video games is when, you know, like Ken's interest in magic cards, I feel like, you know, like all of that stuff. And, you know, I'm not personally interested in magic cards or video games, but I am interested in how Yvonne's brain works through a video game, or how Ken's brain works through magic cards.
Yeah, I thought it was so genius that you got Ken Bauman, because he was like gone. He was completely gone from the community. And like, I followed, he had like these little newsletters over like the past like 8 years that he would send out incrementally and infrequently, just like maybe one or two a year that I would get because I subscribed like years ago just randomly.
And yeah, like, same here.
Oh, you also did?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Because I wondered, like, I was wondering if anyone that was following, like, those newsletters, if they, like, still follow Zona. So, yeah, it's cool that you did.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking of Ken because he is, like, very authentically intellectually curious. Like, I feel like he really wants to read and read widely, and so he seemed kind of perfect. So he was one of the earlier people that I thought of. And I feel like he's like pretty earnest in his desire to learn and to read. And I liked that too. So I was really glad when he said yes. Plus, like, you know, he kind of had like the 2010 internet connection that I wanted.
Yeah, I guess he was on like HTML Giant, just like you were. Yeah. And like he ran his own press. He even like created like his own game board that I guess was like a cult hit.
Yeah, and I don't know, some of the books that he put out, like I can't remember her last name, how to pronounce it, but Sonia I have no idea. Her book was called Salt is for Curing. That book's amazing. Like, he put out some really good books on his press.
Are you guys starting a print mag, I heard?
Yes. We'd like to, and then put those out infrequently when we feel like putting them out, just because it seems like some of the stuff that we put out is really good. I feel like internet stuff disappears, and some of the stuff seemed like particularly I would want to read this in print. Like, I feel like I have a very different experience reading things in print than I do on the screen. So, plus it just seemed like a good way to potentially make money and get a wider readership.
Do you and Misha ever disagree on something?
Not really. Like, we've had, like, what do you think of this? And then we talk through it and then come to some sort of consensus.
Do you have any favorite wrestlers?
No. Scott likes wrestling, but I don't. I like, there's a video that says something about burning the candle at both ends. I like that video clip. And I like the idea that there's some wrestler named Nature Boy, but I don't. I'm like too grew up into like upper middle class of an area to watch wrestling.
Yeah, like Ric Flair, yeah, has nothing to do with nature. That's funny.
Yeah. Ric Flair's Nature Boy.
Yeah, his name Nature Boy Ric Flair. Yeah. What's the burning at both ends thing? I feel like it's an Edge thing.
Maybe is Randy Savage a wrestler?
Yeah.
Okay, maybe it was Randy Savage. I could, like, dig through my Instagram post because I posted it on my stories a long time ago. It was a really good clip.
Yeah, you like, you're into the 80s stuff.
Yeah. I like just old stuff in general.
Yeah.
Like, 50s through, I don't know, 70s or peak. I think 80s is great in terms of, like, TV. Mm-hmm. Like, just the way it looks good. And just the absurdity of the types of things that would air in the 80s are good.
What did you watch when you were a kid?
Mr. Wizard, Clarissa Explains It All. I was really into TGIF shows. Do you know what I'm talking about at all, or am I too old?
No, I remember those.
Yeah.
Home Improvement.
Yeah, you can't do that on television was good. And then I was very obsessed with MTV because I wasn't allowed to watch MTV, so... you know, as a latchkey kid, some days I'd go to like my mom's classroom or Boys and Girls Club. But if I was latchkey kidding it, I would go home, turn on MTV, and then watch it like obsessively until my parents came home from work.
And you like turn it off?
Yeah. There was like a quick flip or something. I don't know what it was called, but it was some button on the remote where it would go to the previous channel real quickly. So I'd put it on like PBS or something. And then when they came home, I'd click that button, and it would go back to PBS or whatever.
Oh, nice. Did you see the movie, See the TV Glow, I think it's called?
Yeah.
You did? What'd you think?
I liked it better at the beginning than the ending. Like, I remember it making me mad at some point partway through.
What happened?
I think I was disappointed. Like, I wanted it to be something that it wasn't, which is a really bad reason to criticize art, but I wanted it to be what I wanted it to be, and it was something else.
What did you want it to be?
I wanted it to be, like, a cool show that was scary about old TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it was those things, but, like, I just felt like it went, I have a bad short-term memory, and I don't really remember what happened in that movie. I just remember I didn't like the ending.
You should watch it with Misha, because Misha wants to watch it.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay. or you could do a Zona event, and everyone watches it together.
Uh-huh, at once. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you can do that. Yeah, that should be a thing you should be able to do.
We did some of those during COVID with... Megan and Joey and Ashley and Chris did that one time of just like watching movies at the same time.
Chris, Lucy's husband?
No, Chris or Oxley, who's Scott's long-term friend.
Okay, is he a writer?
He's writing for Zona Motel, and he's been like working on him. He writes. I think of him as primarily like a filmmaker slash musician, but he's a really good writer too. He's got the projectionist column at Zona Motel.
If you could write your own like TV show like back like that you watched, like what would it be like?
I have no idea. I mean, I think I would like to write about being institutionalized as a teenager. Like, that seems good. Maybe like a dramedy where the kids are at some sort of terrible therapeutic boarding school, maybe a mental hospital, something like that.
Yeah, and maybe it could be that thing of like the mental illness, but the paranormal thing. You
Yeah,
know,
that sounds good.
different characters from the paranormal side and they're friends with.
Yeah, like I could totally see that. We had so much weird shit. I don't know if it was paranormal, but it was just like very weird vibes at the boarding school that I went to, which makes sense because you have a bunch of insane teenagers in the middle of nowhere who are being supervised by adults who don't know what they're doing.
That's totally true. Did you ever watch Sesame Street?
Yeah, I like Sesame Street.
What's your
It's
favorite character?
good. Oscar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Your favorite Stewie. Do you think he's related to Kermit? Because they're both green.
That seems right. Like Kermit's probably the good son and Oscar's probably the bad son.
Yeah. What do you think is like, what do you think his feet look like? Do you think he's like, there's no feet or he's just a blob? Or is he connected to the can?
I kind of imagine him as looking like Kermit, where he's got a really skinny legs underneath.
Never thought about that. That's cool. What if you could make a Sesame Street movie, what would you do with it?
I think it would go into Oscar Grouch's backstory and why he's so grumpy and why he decided to live in a trash can.
Yeah. Do you think at the end everyone would live in a trash can and everyone's
No, I
grumpy?
think it would be like Joker. Like,
Yeah.
yeah, like I think that they should do they should do a Joker-esque movie but about Oscar the
Have
Grouch.
you ever read there's a story in Hill William where this little kid goes to see Batman, but he
Yeah.
realized the guy's not Batman. Have you ever read that in a Joker voice?
No, I haven't. But I did reread Hill William recently, and I didn't like reading it. I mean, I think it's a great book, but it was very, the last time I'd read it was like when Scott, we weren't even dating, we were just friends. And I was like, haha, great book. But like being married to him, I'm like, oh, I wish this stuff didn't happen to you. It's so awful. And I felt very concerned for him and like sad that these things happen. You know, there's a lot of fictional stuff in that book, but some of that stuff is real. So it was funny to have like a completely different experience than the last time I read it.
So when you read someone else's book, does that come into play of like what maybe some of this they've experienced and then you feel bad about them
Not
before them?
besides, like, I don't have never had that experience before of reading somebody's book and like wanting to make elements of it go away. But, you know, I don't have, I mean, I think like, yeah, like, Lieblog, I felt bad for little Megan Boyle. So I guess I have. I'm sure if I started thinking about it. Oh, Molly, I felt very bad for Blake and Molly. So I guess I have had that experience multiple times. So just like wanting to protect them, and you can't because it's already been written.
Well, did Scott say anything? He's like, well, that already happened. Or did he like defend it or anything?
No, we just kind of laughed about it, of like,
Yeah.
I think your book is really great, and I really didn't like reading it. And he was telling me, like, you don't have to keep reading it. And I was like, no, I want to. So, but it was just a very different experience reading it the second time than the first.
Yeah, no one ever brings up Hill William. They always bring up the Sarah book. And
Yeah.
I get annoyed because I'm like, his other books are good too.
Well, I think Hill William is like definitely like the least approachable, in terms of it's a tough book. Like Sarah Book has a lot of tenderness, Crapalacha has a lot of tenderness, but Hill William is pretty just tough through and through.
Oh yeah, now I'm remembering why it was so tough. Okay, yeah.
And Scott would say it's because it's about sexual assault against boys, which nobody wants to read about that, which I think is true. Nobody wants to read about boys getting sexually assaulted.
That happened in that book. I always bring up the Batman thing because I always read that in the Joker's voice, and I think it's funny. I'm like, oh wow, I need to stop bringing that up now. I look
Yeah,
weird.
nobody brings up the sexual assault part. Like it's like a you can tell that society is very uncomfortable with that.
Well, yeah. Would you ever collaborate? Well, I guess you are collaborating with Misha. Would you ever make a show with Misha?
I don't really ever want to make a show. Like, screenwriting seems not fun to me.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's, like, the part of writing that I don't like, which is, like, dialogue. And you
You're
don't...
good with dialogue.
Well, it's hard. And I think, like, I enjoy writing, like, I think, descriptive stuff and, I don't know, describing somebody's inner state. And that's the parts that are not in screenwriting. Dialogue's hard to write. Like, it takes a long time to get it right, I feel like.
How do you think dialogue should work, like, ideally?
I like the idea that, this is not my idea, but that it needs to have more than one function. Like, it should be doing multiple things at once. So you're maybe getting character development and plot development at the same time, or whatever.
You always think about the part of Pluck It Out where, like, they're sitting there smoking, and then they see these two geese, and one's, like, raping the other, and, like, it has, like, the Canadian goose, like, has a penis that looks like pasta. I know that specifically is right because there's an NPR, like, article, like, that runs on the radio every few years about, like, geese that, like, the geese's vagina is, like, shaped like a funhouse or something where, like, there's doors that go, or vagina, like, part of the vagina that goes where just, like, nowhere, but, like, there's, like, three or four of that, those. It's, like, weird how, like, the geese's, like, body parts, like, over time, like, evolve because it's been raped so much. Crazy.
That's a great quote.
Yeah. Do you think period should be more literary?
Like, menstrual periods?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Because, like, I don't know, like, just about every woman I know, their lives are destroyed temporarily every month for at least, like, a few hours, if not longer. And that's normal. And I don't know, sometimes I'll have, like, a really bad cramps and I'll say to Scott that I wish you could know what this felt like. And I don't mean I wish you could suffer, but, like, this is just such a strange feeling that you will never experience.
There is a technology out there I saw, like, on morning.
Yeah,
radio.
I read about that. Yeah.
That you can buy and, like, experience a woman's cramping.
Yeah, one of the many reasons I think that men are inferior to women.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
Totally. What other ways are we inferior to women?
I think, you know, how, like, the stereotype is that women think about silly little things and men think about important stuff. I think it's, like, the opposite. Like, men are thinking about silly little things and women are thinking about important things. I think they're stronger. I think their brains are more interesting. Obviously making, like, broad generalizations.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like, the 50s kind of stereotypes about women, I think, like, are all actually about men.
Oh, yeah, totally. Because, like, I remember I was working at, like, at a overnight grocery store. And, like, one of our bosses was like, well, women are more emotional. And this guy was, like, the most emotional fucking person. He would, like, throw tantrums, like, every goddamn night.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, that's so not true.
Well, women have just been, like, conditioned to be more comfortable with their emotions. I like men. I don't want people to think I don't. But I do think it's funny to say misandrist stuff.
No, I go on Grindr and, like, if you reject a man, like, they start flipping out. They're so
yeah. Weird. Yeah. Men are little bitches.
They are. That's so true.
Yeah.
What was I going to ask you about? Oh, periods. Did you ever read Chloe Caldwell's book?
Yeah. I really liked that book. That was a good one. Yeah. And yeah. I thought it was, like, good in two ways. Like, one, it taught me stuff that I didn't know about menstrual cycle and PMS and PMDD, which I've got, and two, it was also just good writing and a good story.
Well, you have it?
Yeah, and, like, it's really interesting to read about, like, what the body sees these hormones as an attack, like, almost like an immune system sort of response. And then my psychiatrist, she put me on Prozac, and I was, like, really scared to go on Prozac because you're not supposed to take that if you're bipolar. And then I started reading about, like, how it works in PMDD, which is different than depression. And I thought that was really interesting. Like, it's a very strange scientific process, I guess.
Can you talk more about that for people that are listening and might relate?
So what do you mean? Like what it PMDD is, or like the scientific process?
Your experience with it.
Oh, my experience with it is like I was getting like suicidal in a way that wasn't even my feelings. Like it was just like I felt like was having like suicidal thoughts that were not attached to how I actually felt, and crying and so depressed that I like didn't want to move, and just like very extreme states every month. And then my doctor, I tried like a million different types of birth control to control it, and they all just made it worse. And then finally I got on Prozac, and I take it 10 days out of the month about, and it's changed my life. I still get bitchy and moody, but not crazy.
I feel like that could be like a Zona thing. We're talking about human PD.
Well, and I also feel like the majority of the women writers I know have really awful periods. Like, not all of them, but I feel like there's like a strange overlap of women writers and bad periods.
What's your worst period?
When I had an IUD, those were awful because I had like the copper IUD, and you would feel like someone like kicked you in the crotch, and like it was really, really painful. That was not fun. But more, it's like the pain, I don't like it, but it's not like I get crazy cramps. It's more just like the mood instability that was felt like it needed to be addressed medically.
What was your first one like?
It was like in the pluck it out. I don't think I had a friend that helped me, but I was at Christian school. I don't know if that's right. Maybe I started my period at home, and I just remember it like being at school and like worrying about it, like bleeding through my pants. I feel like that was a lie they told us, that you're going to like be wearing white pants and you're going to sit up and they're going to be covered in blood.
So weird to tell kids. I worked at a summer camp over the summer, and there was a lot of people had like families or like sisters. And I asked where this one girl was, and her little sister was like, "Oh, she's at home. She has her period." And then, like, this friend of the family of the older sister was gone. Like, just snapped. This anger came out. I was like, "You don't talk about that." I was like, "Wow." Uh-huh. I just saw, like, because I always wondered, like, I thought, like, maybe, you know, the future generation would be more progressive and talk about this stuff. But, like, no, I think it's always going to be, like, instilled that you're not supposed to or something.
I don't know. My stepdaughter, she's on the autism spectrum, so she doesn't always understand social cues anyways, but she's always talking about her period in front of like her grandfather and her brother. Her brother like fully knows everything about it, and no one acts like it's weird to her too much that she's like talking about her period like publicly. Well, not publicly, but you know, in front of the whole family.
Well, that's awesome.
So, yeah, it's good. I think so.
Yeah, look, there's even some writers that you bring it up and they do not. They shut it down. Like, don't.
Yeah. Well, and Scott, like, there's been times where he's had to, like, get her period blood out of her sheets. And it's funny to think, like, when you were 16, were you thinking that this is going to be a part of your life, is getting period blood out of your daughter's sheets? But, yeah, I didn't think it was going to be part of my life to be a stepmother to a girl with autism trying to help her deal with her period.
Yeah. But do you enjoy it? I don't, maybe not the period part, but do you just enjoy having a stepkid?
Yeah, I love it. Like, I really love both of those kids. They make my life so much richer, I guess, is a good way to put it. I'm very glad they exist.
What's your favorite experience with them?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I just think kind of like the unexpected moments of tenderness where they like, I don't know, do something that makes you feel like they think you're safe and comfortable. I don't know. Iris, we go now, she goes through phases. One phase she's in right now is we go on drives and we listen to pop music. She's 15 now. And she told me yesterday, she's like, "You're like my big sister, but also my stepmom." And that made me feel good.
Do you see things from the younger generation that you're like worried? Do they use ChatGPT?
Iris loves ChatGPT because she for a long time, we were writing stories for her, and she get frustrated at us because we wouldn't do them right. And so ChatGPT, she gets frustrated at it for the same reasons that it doesn't do it right. But unlike us, it'll do it again and again and again for her. And it's concerned me some because she'll call it him, and I keep on telling her, like, it's not a person. It is a stupid robot. Like, it is an it. And I think she started to get that it's a toy, is what I try to tell her, is it's a complicated toy. And then Sam, he will watch movies and do outdoor activities and stuff, but he's very into his device, too. And that concerns me a little bit.
That is concerning, of hearing, like, stories of, like, people in high school and middle school, like, that they're, like, having, like, friendships or, like, relationships with, like, the ChatGPT.
Yeah, I really hate AI. Like, really hate it.
Yeah, and it's, like, it's concerning that it's, like, developing so quickly.
Yeah, like, I think it's, like, possibly going to bring down, maybe temporarily, some element of society. I feel like it's incredibly irresponsible. I feel like we're just, like, accepting it, and we shouldn't. And it's, like, so bad. Like, it seems so bad for such, like, a stupid little reward of, like, here's a bot that you can talk to that's really good at talking and also really fucking annoying. And let's just destroy the planet and the workforce and the economy, okay?
Yeah, and I'm just, like, surprised, like, so many companies just, like, quickly accept it. Like, I'm taking a college course to get my bachelor's after like 10 years or something, but like the way that they schedule like your degree and move everything around, like my admissions person was like using like AI to do it. I was like, mm-hmm. What the fuck? I'm like, how are you already using this for?
Yeah, like the community college that I teach at is really tiny. We don't have a lot of money because, you know, it's Southern West Virginia. And we have an AI task force, and I agreed to chair it because I hate AI so much. I was like, yeah, I'll be in charge. but, like, it bothers me to think about some, like, tiny community college that doesn't have a lot of money, like, potentially investing thousands of dollars on AI so that it can engineer its own demise. That doesn't seem smart to me.
How are you on the chair? Like, what do you have to do anything that you hate?
I mean, I hate Zoom meetings in general because they, like, the staff side of the college has such a different relationship to time than a faculty member does. And so they'll just be how I feel, very inefficient. And I don't like having to schedule meetings. But the nice thing about being a chair is you can force them to be more efficient sometimes.
How are they inefficient? They just go on and on and on.
Yeah, and they'll just, like, have meetings that they don't need to have, and, again, they just have a different, I think it's because, you know, they have to be there from 8 until 4, while faculty is go to class and get your job done, and it doesn't matter when you do it or how long it takes, you just have to do it. So it seems like a lot of times faculty will get irritated at staff because of this different relationship to time.
Mm-hmm. I remember when I was coming up, like, plagiarism was, like, the big no-no, like, people would flip the fuck out and like you would get expelled. But now I'm seeing people like use ChatGPT and like it's kind of like so accepted. Maybe it's a more slap on the wrist. It's not really treated the same.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to prove because like plagiarism you can prove and you can prove plagiarism through AI. It's just it's hard to do that. Like it takes time. Mm-hmm. And I think people are inherently lazy. So they'd rather just slap on the wrist.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe they would learn from it, or maybe they'll just keep doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's very easy to get a student to cop to using AI, I've found.
But
you do have to do work in order to get them to cop to it. Because you'll ask them, like, did you use AI? And they'll say no. And then you're like, okay, well, here are the things. And then suddenly they'll be like, yeah, I used AI.
Yeah. Do they continue to use it or they end up not using it?
It depends on the student.
Okay. So we've been talking about an hour and 15 minutes. Do you need to go?
I need to eat dinner at some point.
Okay. I'm not going to keep you around for like forever talking about
Is there anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to?
I'll probably log off and then I'll be all this stuff I wanted to ask. No, not really. I want to do a podcast for Zona. I just like can't. I think I'd. Yeah, I like the idea of doing like panels, like you brought up.
Yeah. Well, if you'd want to, then email me. Because okay. I think that would be cool. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Yeah. Thanks for doing this. It was awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. I really appreciate all of the support that you've done for Zona Motel. Like, it's meant a lot. So thank
you.
Oh,
no problem. I'm a big shabby doll person. That's where I came from.
Yeah. Yeah, I was really glad when Lucy agreed because she's been so important, I feel like.
Yeah, it's so cool that you guys brought her on. Now, like, it's all a big merger of all these communities. It's really cool what you guys have created.
Yeah, I feel really lucky that she was so enthusiastic and that we get to use her in so many different ways.
Yeah, hopefully I'll meet you guys down in Baltimore, maybe.
Yeah, that'd be cool.